Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. And today, my very special guest is CAL FIRE Captain Jeff Griffith. He has 30 years' experience as a firefighter and a paramedic with CAL FIRE. He's currently a captain, and he's also an elected member of the Palomar Health District Board of Directors. And now, he's a candidate running for the 38th State Senate District, which is an open seat since Senator Joel Anderson is stepping down due to term limits. Now, in addition to Captain Griffith, former Assemblyman Brian Jones, who's currently on the Santee City Council, is also running for the State Senate seat, along with a Libertarian candidate as well, I understand. Now, the 38th District is vast. Along its southern boundary, if you're not sure what district you're in, listeners, it runs from Lemon Grove in the west through Alpine in the east. It encompasses La Mesa, El Cajon, Casa de Oro, Rancho San Diego, Crest, and Harbison Canyon. And then it runs north through Lakeside, Santee, Ramona, and Warner Springs, all the way up to the Riverside County line. And on the western boundary, it encompasses Fallbrook, San Marcos, Vista, Rancho Santa Fe, and Poway. So that's quite a large territory. Captain Griffith, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on today.
Can you start by telling us a little bit about yourself and why you've decided to throw your hat, your firefighter hat, in the ring here and run for the state senate?
Public safety, public service has been a big part of my past. I spent my entire adult life in uniform. I was approached by this district to run for this race due to the fact that there's only one other politician running. And once I took a look at it and I looked at the size of the district and who might be representing me, I decided to enter the race.
Now, you have stated on your website that we no longer have a fire season and we're living with extreme weather all year round now with, as we've seen in recent news stories, rising cost to life, property, and the environment. Just look at the big fires this year in the middle of winter that we had up in Northern California, as well as the Lilac Fire down here. And you've even voiced fears for those who are entering the fire service today. You've said that fire protection is going to be one of your top priorities if you're elected. How does your approach differ, perhaps, from Brian Jones, who's had a few years in the Assembly? And what steps will you take, if you're elected, to try to keep Californians safer from these explosive firestorms?
My experience in the fire service, I've seen the fires 30 years ago that were manageable, and today they're out of control. The intensity and the size have gotten out of control, and anybody that wanted to be a firefighter these days, I would probably talk them out of it just due to safety concerns.
Wow.
If nothing is done, it's only going to get worse.
So what was Brian Jones's voting record like on fire safety issues when he was in the legislature for all those years?
I don't have a complete voting record on him. I did have an interview with California Professional Firefighters, which is a fire service advocacy group, and having conversations with them, Brian Jones had been interviewed prior to my arrival, and I asked him about how his interview went. And the board of CPF stated that they checked his legislative record, and he has voted against fire service interest numerous times during his time in the Assembly.
Wow. Do you know what percentage? Or
they were not happy with his voting record. I don't know what a percentage breakdown would look like, but I did get the feeling that they did not want him as their candidate.
Well, that's very important to know. Thank you for sharing that. And we certainly will be extending an invitation to Brian Jones as well, equal time, you know, to come on the show and defend his record. So what are some of the things that should be done? If you could wave your magic wand up there in Sacramento and introduce some legislation, what do you think should or could be done to better help prevent these fires from starting in the first place?
Oh, a big part of the reason why the fires are getting so big is because of climate change. Climate change leads to drought. Drought leads to bark beetle infestation. It leads to the decrease of the healthy status of our forest. I think a big part to help out the forest is cap and trade funding. The fact that we have funding that we can improve watershed and also reduce the amount of fuels in the forest, we're utilizing grants instead of using the regulations in a public-private partnership. I think that would be a huge part of it.
Okay. You know, it should be noted here that Brian Jones is a climate change denier who has actually opposed both of the major bills to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, bills that were enacted into law. So you believe that climate change is real and that man has a role in it, and that through these actions that we should be helping to combat it, and that that's basically important from a fire safety standpoint.
Yes. You know, I mentioned the drought before. Our rain totals are off. The type of weather patterns we have are changing. It's different before. The fact that there was a fire season that maybe lasted 4 or 5 months, and then maybe we had some Santa Ana wind events down in Southern California. I spent 20 days on duty during December because of Thomas Fire. I've never had to do that before. This is not longer a fire season. It's either if it's windy or not windy. If it's windy, there's going to be fires.
Yeah. I haven't heard a fire official yet say they don't believe in climate change. They're seeing it every day on the front lines. We've heard this from SDG&E. I was just an event where the meteorologists were talking, and they were saying the same thing, that we really have to prepare for year-round fire season specifically because of climate change. And yet Brian Jones actually brought a climate change denier to San Diego State to speak, a guy that had been debunked as claiming he was a member of the House of Lords and wasn't. And I mean, do you find it troubling that a public official is ignoring what 97% of the world's climate scientists say is true?
I think public policy should be driven by science. And the fact that we have the science and is conclusive, the fact that our weather patterns are changing, but we're not changing with it. You know, part of good governance is providing the services needed for our communities. If we deny that there's change, we're not going to plan for it. If we don't plan for it, we're going to put ourselves at risk.
Yeah. Speaking of putting yourselves at risk, a big issue lately has been firefighter safety. We're seeing, unfortunately, way too many firefighters losing their lives early, either from the fires themselves, you know, the tragedies we've seen recently, but also the long-term health issues from all the toxins they're exposed to, the smoke, and firefighter suicides are on the rise. Do you have any ideas of what could be done legislatively to better protect our brave firefighters?
Yeah, that's the biggest interest of mine. The fact that we lost a member this last year, a Cal Fire employee that had 10 years experience, he was a company officer, and the fact that he was involved in a burnover.
Yeah, the Thomas Fire.
The Thomas Fire. And, you know, he was from Escondido, lifelong Escondido resident, North County.
Yeah, he'd actually been stationed at Dulcer, at a station out here in East County.
Exactly. This is not a new employee. This is someone that's received some of the best training in wildland firefighting. And the fact that the danger is so high in the wildland that he was basically have a line of duty death. Just firefighting in general is a very toxic profession. We have higher incidence of cancer. We have lower life expectancies. And also, one thing that's never talked about is PTSD, its effect on the fire service. In fact, our suicide rate is starting to approach our line of duty death, and it's starting to approach the same rates as the military.
Wow. Yeah, we've written about that, and it is terrible. What's the answer to that? Is it more counseling, better healthcare? I don't know. What can we do to make things a little better for these folks?
Easier access. It's not something that's been discussed about in the past. The fact that we lost three members last year, we lost a Orange County fire captain, we lost a Cal Fire fire captain in South County, and we lost a member in Escondido. Mm-hmm. There's one PTSD treatment facility for fire service is in Maryland. I don't know why Southern California can't have such a treatment center. I think increasing access to behavioral health and increased funding for it to get the special services that are needed to protect us. And it's not just fire service. It's law enforcement, paramedics, EMT personnel. We need education and we need access.
Yeah. Yeah. Good idea. Let's talk about evacuations during a fire. In Northern California, there were 40 deaths in those fires, and a lot of them were because people simply didn't get the word. There wasn't enough coordination about the evacuation notices. And then another issue is escape routes. We've certainly seen bottlenecks coming out of, say, Ramona here. There's worries in North County and even Santee about new housing projects coming in, where there doesn't seem to have been enough planning maybe about how to get everybody out of there if there's, God forbid, a major fire. Do you have some ideas about ways to improve emergency notification and streamline evacuation procedures to make sure that as many people can be saved as possible when these fires occur?
Yeah, this is the 21st century. We should have access to technology that will get the word out to our communities. The fact that up in Northern California, the 911 reverse system didn't work as well as intended. It shows us that we need improvement. We need improvement in communication and alerting and early evacuations. Early notification will save lives.
Yeah, definitely very important. What about homeowners who have lost their homes or had huge damage? I want to ask you about a package of bills. But first, it's worth noting that Brian Jones, again, your opponent, one of his biggest funders was the insurance industry in his past campaigns, which typically opposes reforms to help consumers get better insurance coverage. Now, our state insurance commissioner, Dave Jones, no relation to Brian as far as I know, he is supporting a package of about a dozen bills in the legislature right now that aim to protect homeowners who suffer devastating losses from these wildfires. For example, after a big fire, it's often hard to find temporary shelter, and the builders are backlogged, and you can't rebuild as fast as you might like to. His package would allow victims to claim temporary living expenses for things like renting an RV or a bed and breakfast, not just hotels that tend to be booked up. It gives people a longer time period to rebuild after a disaster and still have the insurance cover it. And insurance companies would have to regularly advise homeowners about estimated replacement costs that go up through the years, and a lot of people get caught underinsured when a big fire finally happens. And it would let homeowners combine their claim money. Let's say you had multiple structures, sheds that burned down, and also your content coverage, and apply all of that toward just rebuilding the house if that's how you choose to spend that money. Let's say you were underinsured, and this would allow them to do that. Would you support reforms such as those?
Yeah, after a disaster, people need a chance to be able to catch their breath, to make contact with their insurance company, to contact family members, to contact their jobs, to let them know what has happened. They don't need to have to chase after these services. They should be offered up by the insurance companies, and it should be some kind of trigger mechanism to allow this. I have a conversation with my insurance agent once a year just to see what kind of coverage I have in my own residence. And
good
I think
idea.
That's something that should be regulated also. People should not be surprised when they don't have enough coverage. The fact that whole communities will basically disappear, that the fire crews are there, they need shelter, and the people that lost their homes need shelter, and it becomes a matter of scarce resources as far as residences. There needs to be something where these people are taken care of immediately and not have to worry about it.
Yeah, exactly. That's so important. We've seen that firsthand. I've covered these fires for decades out here, and it just seems like it gets worse and worse. You are running as a Democrat, but some of your issues do cross party lines. You seem to have taken some points from both sides of the aisle, which is rather interesting. Not cookie cutter politics as usual. I'm just going to rattle off a few of them, listeners. We may not have time to go into all of them, but from your website, it says that you're in favor of conservative, thoughtful management of taxpayer dollars, improving coordination among state and local agencies to improve the management of emergencies, especially for smaller communities such as many of these little towns in East County, improving fire protection through public-private partnerships, as you've mentioned, supporting trades education in community colleges and apprenticeships to train students for good-paying jobs, reducing student debt, addressing the opioid crisis, and fighting for quality, affordable health care, including a universal single-payer system. So let's start by talking about health care, because this is another area we have a lot of expertise. What has your experience as a paramedic and as an elected member of the Palomar Health District Board taught you about our health care system and what you think needs to be improved?
Yeah. As I mentioned, I've been a paramedic. I've been transporting paramedic out of Ramona for 10 years. So I delivered my patients to both Palomar and Pomerado, plus Children's Rady's Hospital, utilizing hospitals clear across the county. I've seen firsthand what having a lack of access to healthcare means as far as the healthcare system itself. Too many people utilize the 911 system to provide primary care instead of emergency care, which has led to overcrowding in the local hospital emergency rooms. If we have more access to healthcare, and also a big part of it is preventive care, which leads to better outcomes, the fact that people wait to seek care and they get sicker and it gets more expensive, they'll have regular visits to their primary physician and get on a treatment program where they have healthier lives.
Yeah, I just saw a study out this week And it was an international study on healthcare, and it found that of all the developed nations in the world, the U.S. actually ranked the worst, last, in terms of the cost and the quality of the healthcare.
Yes, know? Our life expectancies aren't as high as other countries. Our infant mortality are higher than other countries.
And it's not that we don't have great doctors and some great hospitals. We have some of the best in the world. The problem is the access that a lot of people simply cannot afford it. They don't have health insurance, or the deductibles are so high that they can't afford to use the insurance that they have.
I'm kind of concerned about the fact that Brian Jones wants to go back to Sacramento for 8 years and collect a paycheck and get free health care for the next 8 years. I think there's better use of that position and the type of issues that need to be addressed.
You have indicated that you're in favor of universal health care. I would like to ask you to what degree you envision that being possible in the current political climate. What would it take? And how would you fund beginning to implement at least piecemeal universal health care in California?
Well, we have two forms of single payer. We have Medicare and we have the VA.
So for those who would say this is socialized medicine, that would be your answer to that?
It is two systems that are single payer, and they both have good outcomes, and they have controlled cost, and they actually enjoy good reviews from the people that utilize it. Now, I know Sacramento is working on an expansion of Medicare, which they call Medicare X. If single payer does come about, it would be California. I don't think California will be able to do it until there's a change at the federal level. I think any innovative assistance we put in place that would lead to single payer would probably be blocked at the federal level.
So even if California, one of my next questions was going to be, how might we fund it? Because actually a couple of years ago, there was a single payer bill that moved through the legislature, and it was passed by one house of the legislature and blocked by just two votes in the other house. Of course, one of the big issues is how you would fund it. But you're saying that even if somehow they came up with the money, if they decided to use the marijuana taxes or whatever, that the federal government is so mean-spirited that they would basically tell California, no, you don't have states' rights when it comes to health care?
That's what I would think. I think that unless there's a change at federal level, there's different ways we could fund it. You mentioned the marijuana taxes be one part of it, but there's also one initiative that the California Nurses Association is in favor of, and it's called the Robin Hood tax. And basically it's a 1% transaction fee for financial trades. It'd be almost non-existent that would affect normal people. Or members of the public, but it would be a huge source of funding for healthcare.
You mentioned the nurses. It's worth noting that you have had the backing of the California Nurses Association when you've been a candidate for the healthcare, a successful candidate for the Palomar Healthcare District Board before.
Yes, I have enjoyed incredible amount of support from both firefighters and nurses. Nurses are the backbone of our healthcare system. They're the ground troops that lead to better outcomes and more favorable results of good healthcare.
Absolutely. Another healthcare issue is ambulance services. You certainly have experience in that as a paramedic. We've done a series of investigative reports on ambulance services in San Diego, specifically East County, and it was rather appalling to find out that our county considers a 30-minute response time to be adequate in the rural areas. Granted, it's spread out geographically, but you know, the entire state of Missouri manages to have a 6-minute average response time for the entire state as of when we did this. And they've got lots of rural areas out there in the Ozarks and so forth. How is it that Missouri can do that and California can't? Should the legislature mandate or at least incentivize large counties like San Diego to have a requirement for a better, faster response time? Because as a paramedic, let me ask you this. If you're having a heart attack and it takes a half an hour for the ambulance to get there, what are the chances you're going to survive that?
Don't know about Missouri. I would imagine they did it through regulation. Anytime you have a for-profit company, you're going to have that bottom line as one of the things they look at. They're not there for to have the best service for the price. They want to keep it as the service is low cost to provide the biggest profit for that company. I was a fire department paramedic that was taxpayer paid for. It wasn't for profit. I don't think healthcare should be a for profit.
So you're referring here to the county outsourcing its ambulance services to private corporations.
Exactly. And anytime you have a private corporation, you're going to have board directors, you're going to have CEO, and you're going to have a profit margin for that industry itself.
So you really think that these should be services provided by the public entity itself, not outsourced?
I think you get the best service.
Either way, whether it's run by the government or whether it's outsourced, should there be a requirement that there be something in the contract that the response time, at least for well-funded counties or large counties, that maybe there should be a state standard for response times?
Oh, I agree. Every county actually has a separate EMS department. It's not really unified as far as something the entire state looks at. And I would love to change that. The fact if I work in Riverside County, I have to get certified in that county. I already have certification in San Diego. I have a state scope of practice. I should be able to work anywhere in California. It shouldn't be so fragmented that each county has different regulations. And the same thing goes for ambulances. It should be a one state standard. It should be a certain response rate. It should not be up to the counties to make their own decisions for response times.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And another thing is mutual response contracts. We were pretty horrified to find out when we asked to see, let's see the mutual aid response contracts when the county changed ambulance providers a couple of years ago. And they told us there were six and we asked for the contracts and they were only able to come up with one that was actually in writing. And it was with a provider in Imperial County. And I said, wait a minute. So if you're having a heart attack in Alpine and our ambulance company is busy, we're supposed to wait for somebody to come from Imperial County an hour away? This is crazy.
Yeah. And that's one reason that the fire service has gone towards EMS and paramedic services. The fact that we're on scene earlier and provide care sooner, it leads to increased survival rates. If you're having a stroke, there's a golden hour for stroke for you to recover.
That's
right.
You need to be
transported to the nearest stroke center to get the appropriate care to regain the same type of lifestyle you have.
Yeah, and the county will tell us, well, we've got air ambulances, say if there's a bad accident, but you know, they can't always fly at night, they can't fly in bad weather, so if you have an accident on a rainy day out there, folks, you know, with the thunderstorms, good luck.
Yeah, trauma is one thing, but cardiac's another thing. Stroke is something that can be devastating for your quality of life. So you need all aspects. You know, it can't be just trauma. It's got to be all aspects of healthcare.
Yeah, very important. Listeners, if you just tuned in, we are speaking with CAL FIRE Captain Jeff Griffith, who is a candidate for the 38th State Senate District representing East County and much of the San Diego region. Now, CAL FIRE itself has not been without controversy as the County Fire Authority has been moving to consolidate fire resources and take over rural volunteer fire departments across our inland area and staff them with professional CAL FIRE crews. One of the major areas of concern has been in Julian, which is actually the very last volunteer fire department. And when I talk to people up there, the major concern they have, it isn't that they don't like CAL FIRE, it's that they don't really trust the county. Because once before, the whole reason these volunteer fire departments got started is because the county back in the 70s had pulled out of the firefighting business. And then after these big firestorms, they got back in it again. So the problem, as I see it, is that the county has no guarantee written into the county charter to prevent the county from withdrawing from firefighting again someday if they're pinching pennies, as has occurred in the past. Someone in Julian likened this to the county, basically. It's like Charlie Brown and Lucy with the football. You know, they're saying, come kick the football, and we promise we won't pull it away again, but there's people who are worried that they will. So if you were elected, would you support legislation or incentives or something to require or encourage big counties like San Diego to guarantee firefighting coverage in their charter in exchange for, you know, maybe some other benefits or something?
Of course. San Diego County has been victims to some of the biggest fires in California. The fact 2003, 2007, that we had fires jumping the freeway system, you know, the I-15.
Yeah.
And it led to amazing loss of life and property. It's something that the county wasn't that interested in at that time. They're more interested in keeping a high level of cash on hand and having a budget reflects that financial conservatism. They have since then realized that they need to spend money to protect county residents. And that's why you've seen more of a consolidation of fire districts in the county. When you look at Riverside, Cal Fire has over 100 stations in the county system. And as a fire captain, I can order $1 million worth of equipment right off an initial attack.
100 stations. How many does San Diego County Fire Authority have?
That I do not know. I haven't worked in San Diego County for at least 10 years. I know that they consolidate quite a bit. And they're not only a consolidation, but even the communication system was fractured back in 2003, 2007.
Yeah, they've certainly made a lot of improvements. I don't want to make it sound like they haven't. And I know that our county has spent a lot of money on improving fire safety. But that said, the current supervisors are all going to be termed out pretty soon. Who knows who's going to replace them? Who knows if they're going to have that same commitment or what other things may come along that may be a priority? So you're saying, you're going on record as saying that you would support legislation to make sure that counties like San Diego have to put fire protection into their budget, at least if they're providing a county fire service.
I'm sure that it's got to be some kind of formula for per capita residents and amount of money spent on fire protection.
So there should be some kind of state mandate for that, at least in a county where the county says we're in charge and we're going to do this and we're not relying on, you know, volunteer stations anymore. We're,
right.
We're making the volunteer stations close down, basically.
It shouldn't be dependent on who is currently in office. It should be something as a standard for protection of county residents.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Now, speaking of protecting county residents, another big issue that we've been hearing about a lot in the last couple of months in East County and much of North County as well is these frequent intentional power outages that SDG&E has begun implementing to prevent their lines from sparking fires. Now, obviously, nobody wants another situation like in 2007 where we had extreme winds. Fire lines did cause, you know, they were found by Cal Fire to have caused some of these big fires. And SDG&E doesn't want that to happen. Residents don't want to happen. But with this sophisticated weather equipment that SDG&E has, they are able now to pinpoint just where the winds will be extreme. We had winds of over 100 miles an hour in December, but some areas seem to be getting burdened a lot more than others. I was just at a meeting in Descanso, and they have had a dozen intentional power outages in 2 months up there. A dozen of them. Some people had total losses for food spoilage in their refrigerators, not just once, but several times over. One person had $600 in losses. SDG&E is not accepting any responsibility. They've made a decision not to pay for any of that. They're claiming that the high winds are a natural disaster, and therefore, even though they turned off the power on purpose to prevent fires, that they have no obligation to reimburse people for these losses or even losses from power surges when the power came back on and apparently caused some damage from what we're hearing. And of course, being without power in a rural area can be very dangerous in and of itself. The fire isn't the only risk. What if you have a heart attack, your cell phone's not working, your landline isn't working because of the outage, and some of these places have no cell phone service? What if you rely on well water, as a lot of them do, and you can't pump water to fight spot fires if they start, to water your livestock, or even just to, you know, to flush your toilets? So do you have any ideas of things that maybe should be done legislatively to strike the right balance between making sure we're protected from these fires, maybe with outages, if that's really the only way to do it, but at the same time, making sure that communities are not excessively burdened? And if people suffer losses, should the utilities be required to reimburse them for those losses? And should there be some limits to how many times they can pull the plug without having to maybe underground lines or do something else so that people aren't inconvenienced and put at risk repeatedly?
Yeah. I understand that the power companies try and protect themselves, and they're also trying to protect the residents. And they have the technology. They have historic data that knows what areas are going to get hit the hardest as far as winds.
Yeah, they do. I mean, SDG&E actually has the most sophisticated weather system of any utility in the United States, or so they say. So, and that part of it's very impressive.
Yeah, and they have other avenues that they can explore. They can either put the power lines underground, which costs more, understandable. They can have steel posts for the transmission lines that has a fire-hardening aspect to it, but where's the public good versus the inconvenience of losing their power, their communication? People need electricity to keep their insulin. Some people are on home oxygen concentrators. They need electricity.
Yeah.
So there's got to be some kind of trigger and regulated process. if they haven't done anything to make it safer, then they need to have some kind of regulations to how many times they can cut off the power. There's got to be some kind of standard. They can't just eyeball it.
If the PUC is not doing anything about this, which they, let's face it, the PUC has long been in the pocket, you know, of the utilities up there. Do you think the legislature needs to hold some hearings on some of these issues maybe?
Well, once again, it's the public good. When these fires hit, it's devastating. California spent $1.8 billion last year fighting fires. Now we're going to get some of that money back from federal funds with disaster aid. But can you imagine how much of that funds we could put towards prevention and education?
Good point. So maybe if it would be in the state's interest to kick in a little bit of money and say, if we can prevent a fire here by maybe undergrounding a line, or if we do have to shut off power, we're going to reimburse these residents, bringing water in during an outage. There's more that could be done, maybe.
Definitely.
All right. Very good. I'm sure that you'll have a lot of East County listeners that are going to like that answer. Your opponent, Brian Jones, some of his key areas of focus in the legislature have been on keeping taxes low, gun rights, and supporting off-road vehicle parks, as well as opposing immigration reforms and, you know, typical Republican party line stances on a lot of things. Some of his stances are ideological, some of them are partisan, and some of them seem to correlate to the views of his major donors. For example, he has opposed universal health care. He's taken big donations from pharmaceutical and insurance companies. His voting record has drawn ratings of zero or single digits in his last years in office from the environmental groups like Sierra Club and League of Conservation Voters. He's opposed climate change, and he's taken a lot of money from the oil and gas industry. He's also taken a lot of money from electric utility companies. Also a lot of money from tobacco, alcohol, we could go on. And most of the time, his voting record seems to reflect those interests. So I would like to ask how your views and your priorities agree or disagree with Brian Jones in any of those key areas that you'd like to jump in and address.
Brian Jones is basically my polar opposite. I'm fighting the fact that I like to have clean air, clean water, food that doesn't make me sick, or medications that will kill me. I want regulations. I think it keeps us healthier as a community. The fact that he seems to be in line with some of the special interests that gives him money, that's on him. And he has a voting record, and we know who gives him money.
So you're concerned about the special interest influences. In all fairness, would you like to tell us who your major funding sources or backers are? I guess I know it's very early in this campaign, but in the past, when you've been on the healthcare board as well.
Yeah. Well, in the past, the two campaigns that I ran, I was supported by firefighters and nurses. And that just reflects back to my main concerns of public safety and healthcare. There are certain special interests I'll never take money from. You know, tobacco is one of them. I think tobacco is a huge public health concern. They're even talking about reducing the amount of nicotine in tobacco products to reduce the amount of people addicted to cigarettes, and I'm for that. And that's from the Trump administration, FDA, which is amazing.
Very interesting. Didn't know about that one. You've mentioned that you also want to stand up for working families. Can you give us an example or two of how you would stand up for working families? And I'd also like to ask you, when you mentioned that you're for regulation, where do you stand on that with regard to small businesses? Is there a different view of regulations maybe that may impact small businesses, which really are the backbone of the economy in East County, versus the big corporations out there?
Oh, understood. I'm truly come from a blue-collar family. My dad's side of the family, they were all miners or work in the forestry. I went to a community college, and that's where I picked up my paramedic license. My oldest daughter went to Palomar College, and she became a state-certified welder. She is now the newest member of the Sheet Metal Workers Local 206.
Good for her.
I think the middle class is the backbone of our community, but small businesses drive the economic engine of the state, and they shouldn't have undue regulatory burdens to put them out of business. There should be a balancing of regulations for the public good versus regulations that's going to put people out of business.
There you go. One thing I hear over and over from voters out here is that they are so concerned about the influence of big money in politics. This perception, you know, that maybe the public interest is taking a back seat to special interests. Why should voters believe that you have the backbone that it takes to stand up to special interests and put the public interest first if need be?
Yeah. Well, I understand that. Brian Jones, the reason he got into politics because he was an off-road enthusiast and he wanted to protect access to certain areas for his sport. And that led him to become city councilman in Santee and then spend 6 years in assembly. During that 6 years, he only passed one bill. It was a minor welfare reform act. And he wants to go back to Sacramento for an additional 8 years. I want to go to Sacramento, and there's certain things I want to do to make things safer and also make it healthier. I have no special interest except for public safety and healthcare. Yeah, I spent my entire life in uniform. I have been a public safety employee, and I have been on the front lines of keeping people safe. I can recognize good governance versus bad governance. I've been fighting to save lives and protect people for my entire adult life. I don't think special interests are going to influence that.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. Listeners, again, if you've just tuned in, we've been speaking with CAL FIRE Captain Jeff Griffith. He's a firefighter and paramedic and member of the Palomar Healthcare District Board, and now he's running for the 38th State Senate District. Captain Griffith, I'm going to give you the final word here. What else would you like listeners to know about yourself and your candidacy, and where can they get more information about you?
Appreciate the time today. It has been fantastic to talk about some of the issues that affect East County. I wish to represent the entire county. I want to make things safer and healthier for everybody. The fact that I have won two campaigns, the first one me being a complete political novice, and the second campaign being one of the three incumbents and the only one getting elected. This is a tough district for a Democrat to run in, but with my name recognition and experience, I think I have a really good chance to succeed in this. And
yeah, how many votes did you get when you ran for the healthcare board?
The last election I ran, I received 71,000 votes. I received 10,000 more than the closest competitor to me. And I understand that the last state senator that ran was Joe Anderson. He won with 90,000 votes. So I'm right there in the neighborhood. All I need to do is have enough people that are also interested in public safety and healthcare to support me and send me to Sacramento.
Where can people go to get more information about your candidacy?
You can check out my website. It is www.griffithforsenate.com. That's Griffith, G-R-I-F-F-I-T-H, F-O-R, Senate, S-E-N-A-T-e.com.
Very good. Thank you so much, Captain Griffith, for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Thank you for having me.